is the Rams Review Podcast. Discussion, insights, interviews, and analysis. All passion, all Derby County. The Rams Review Podcast is proud to be part of the Fan Hub 100, where fans come first.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Rams Review Podcast with myself and Jason. Jason is feeling unwell, a little bit under the weather today, so I'll be taking sole hosting duties. So hopefully it's a pleasure to your ears and not too offensive to hear my accent or lack thereof. So today we'll be talking about Rooney's rampant Rams taking on the R's, and to help me make sense of Queen's Park Rangers and to preview the match is Paul Finney from the QPR podcast. Paul, how are we?
Not too bad. I'm glad that we both, I haven't got a weird accent either. I'm proper London, I am.
See, that's good. We can have an American talk about Derby and a Northern Irishman talk about QPR. What better? The globalization of football, am I right?
As it should be.
So, Paul, back in the fall, Derby and QPR played each other. Do you remember the score?
I do now. Well, see, I was just explaining to you, though. It's true. I can't remember Jack with this flipping lockdown. All games roll into one. I just know that we've been on the whole pretty lousy and shite. And we beat Luton 2-0, which was nice. And then you reminded me, you were one of the teams we managed to beat this season. So, yeah. How bad must you be if we beat you? Jesus. But, it was 1-0, I believe. Macaulay-Bond scored.
It was Macaulay-Bond in kind of the dying embers of that game. Since that time in fall, obviously now when you come up against Derby County, you're coming up against a completely, I wouldn't say a completely different animal, but slightly different, as Philip Kaku is no longer in the dugout. And it is somebody you might have heard of, some former player named Wayne Rooney.
I do.
Now taking charge in the dugout. So since kind of that game in fall, what's been the story of QPR season from, you know, mid-November to the 20th of January, really?
We've basically been crap. There's no other way. I could sugarcoat it by saying we've been unlucky, but we haven't. We've been, you know, we couldn't hit a barn door with a tank. We're sort of nosediving towards relegation. And we're just hoping that, you know, the philosophy of the club seems to be the last couple of seasons to three worse teams than us. Therefore, we avoid relegation just by default. Last season, we had a bit of a run, so we managed to get away from it. Since we got relegated from the Premier League after Bobby Zamora Day, as we call it. Just to get that out of the way, done and dusted. We'll not mention that again.
And you promised you wouldn't mention it.
I know, but I lie a lot. But to be fair, I'd mention it more if we actually managed to fucking stay in the league and actually use that as a great stepping stone. But in true QPR fashion, we got promoted when we probably shouldn't have done because we weren't that great that season or that day, as you remember, and then completely fucked it up by getting relegated. So anyway, but yeah, we're struggling and defensively we've been a bit of a sham. It's really weird. It's kind of, we've got a brilliant young keeper, and thank God. But if it wasn't for him, we'd be getting battered week in, week out. And then we brought Charlie Austin back, basically before the Luton game. And he seems to have just, it was a bit worry actually, because he came in and he scored and he won. And then basically he did an interview for the BBC where he said, oh, the manager was telling him to play from the back. And I just said, don't do that. Give me the ball and I'll score. So immediately comes in and just, this is a manager and says, yeah, that he was telling, I said, nah, sod that, give me the ball and I'll knock it in. And he did. And he's what we've been missing. He's kind of that old fashioned, well, everyone knows how good Charlie Austin is. How the hell we managed to get him back. And he could actually be the difference between us getting relegated and us then in the championship, which to be fair, he's the injection we needed, but we've been pretty, pretty ropey to be honest with you.
Yeah. Cause I remember Charlie Austin was a name that was rumored to come to Derby kind of as Derby center forward search kind of unfolded and throughout the summer, and they couldn't get their main target in, said Arderson, and they couldn't get Charlie Austin because I don't think he wanted to go to the championship at the time. And Derby ended up calling Kazim Richards. But yeah, I mean, Charlie Austin, we know what his quality brings at this level. He's a low end Premier League high-end championship striker and he guarantees you goals, and to come back to QPR, when I saw that, I was like, that's definitely going to improve them up front, because I know Landon Dykes, the lad that they signed from Livingston in the summer, he's been kind of up and down a bit for him, I would believe, recently. Is that a bit of an assessment there for Dykes?
He's still trying to find his feet, but then he's new to the game. I mean, he was very late into football anyway, and I think it was a big gamble, and he's doing very well for Scotland. But not so well for us. And I think he scored one goal from open play, the rest being penalties. Him and Macaulay Bourne haven't been hitting it off, and they've been, he plays one, takes one. You know, the thing about Warburton is you always know what subs he's going to make. You're just not sure what time. But they've kind of been swapping them. But yeah, I think Austin's quality. I mean, it's a bit like Rooney, you know, you watch these players and they're just a different level. Now, whether they're still good enough to play the Premiership is very doubtful, but they've just got the ability. Whereas when Austin was with us and he scored 18 goals in the season, we got really good at it. So, I mean, he has got the quality and he is a decent finisher. But it seems to be if he's happy or not. And for some reason, thank God, he loves QPR. He loves coming back here. His family are settled in that area. They love that, you know, living in Chiswick and all that malarkey. So he's really into it. It shows, because as soon as he came into the Luton, the team were a different animal completely. You know, like our suicide defending is legendary at Rangers. I mean, we're terrible. We just can't defend. I mean, and they're just very jumpy. Where he's calmed everyone down. So yeah, I'm looking forward to Saturday. I think it's going to be an interesting game, because you know, you got your win last night. We're playing Cardiff in a couple of hours, so it'll be interesting to see how we get on against that. And whatever happens at Cardiff will springboard into Saturday. I'm hoping that we can get either a point or 3 points. And just stop getting frigging beat every week. Because you know what it's like? You're down this end of the table. There's nothing worse than being a beaten championship side week in and week out. It's so fucking depressing. Oops, can you spoil it?
You don't say. As Darby.
But it is. It's like when you're in the Premiership. When you're in the Premiership and you're getting beat every week, you kind of expect it. Do you know what I mean? Because you've got these arrogant swords, fans giving you crap all the time. You think, oh, don't mind that. But when you're in a Championship, it seems a hell of a lot more depressing. And I can't quite figure it out, because I prefer the Championship, if I'm being honest. I mean, it's easy. I don't mean to say the Derby fan, because you haven't got up for a while, but it's just when you go up to that level and people start turning up at your ground in half and half scarves and all this nonsense. And like, when you play a team, they meet like Liverpool and that, the media circus turn up and really patronise you. Anytime you get on TV, they're patronising you. And they tell the most basic things about your football club. That, you know, I do prefer the Championship. It's a much better football, and you've got a chance of winning sometimes. But this season has been depressing. But yes, Charlie Austin is back, and we're looking much, much better. So I'm kind of hoping we can springboard that into Saturday.
So let's talk about Mark Warburton. Is he under pressure?
Do we have to?
So with that, I get your kind of thoughts on Mark Warburton, and is he under pressure from the QPR board? Because I know Warburton has a decent track record at this division. You know, he is kind of, from the perspective of myself, on the outside looking in from supporting a team that never has had Mark Warburton, he always seems to be a good kind of team builder, solid, steady pair of hands. I mean, QPR, is he under pressure? I mean, how has he felt amongst the fan base and those kind of things?
I think he was probably two games away from the sack. And there's no question about that. I think if we'd have lost to Luton, and then if you lost to Cardiff tonight, I couldn't see him keeping his job. I'm still not sure what his future is at QPR. Last season was a much better season. We solid it, you know, he did really well. We had a strong start. It kind of wavered a little bit, and we finished dreadfully, but we managed to finish at a decent level. This season has just been, you know, he's got plan A, which isn't very great. And when it's not working, his subs, as I said earlier on, you can call his substitutions. He won't change the system. It's like, I've got plan A, and plan B is to do plan A better. And yeah, it's been a bit of a slog this season. It's been hard to watch. His contract's up at the end of the season, and I get the feeling that, you know, definitely Austin's been brought in above his head. I think Austin's been brought in by the QPR board and not the manager, which is interesting. So, and his contract's up, as I say. So I'll be surprised if he's our manager at the start of the season. And that's, you know, is that a reflection on him or the club? I don't know, because we've got the director of football, then we've got the chairperson and everything else. And it seems to be that we change direction every 3 or 4 months. We want to bring in youth players, and we don't want to bring in youth players. And we're kind of saying, right, we're going to stick to the plan. It's the blood youth team players. Bring them into the first team, like Eze, sell them off. And then all of a sudden you're playing rubbish. It's like, shit, bring in Charlie Austin. Do you know what I mean? It's like they keep changing things mid-season. So His stubbornness certainly doesn't help him, I think, at QPR. He's probably a really nice man. He's come on our podcast and he's a sound bloke and he will talk to you. And he's always up against it because he hasn't got a football background, because he comes from the city and he's come into football late in life. He's obviously, like people say, well, he hasn't gone with the right route. You know what football's like. So, but I'd be surprised if he's our manager next season, to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he would obviously be a good pickup for anybody, but it'd be different. It'd be interesting to see the direction QPR take without him next season. One of those players you mentioned there, Eze, obviously we've seen his quality in the Premier League this season on countless occasions. Another player who's kind of coming off the, I guess, leaving QPR from what I can read is Bright Asaidi Samuel, former Blackpool winger.
Yeah.
So your thoughts on Asaidi Samuel and his potential move to Fenerbahce?
Well, he's signed, hasn't he? So he's leaving, and he won't be wearing the QPR shirt for the game this season. So that's the end of him. Badly handled, if truth be told. We should have tied his contract. This is what I don't understand. You know, we're talking about these sort of things, but someone like Cher and Samuel should be tied up into long term deals. And there's an awful lot of players in 4-year contracts that haven't got the quality he has. And he's a great player. He's exciting. He's dynamic. He's a fantastic winger. And and to lose him for nothing, by the looks of it, is just criminal. But even worse is he didn't tell the club that he signed, apparently, for Fred Batchelor, which is a breakdown in communications. But the trouble is, again, see, Warburton made a statement with Ryan Manning. Ryan Manning didn't sign a contract. So then Ryan Manning was not allowed to play and sold to Cardiff cheaply. So therefore, he made a statement by doing that. So we had to do the same with Bright Samuel. I would rather we were 10th in the league and he did this rather than the bottom. But to be fair, he'd lost the fans. The fans turned against him. And rightly so, because, you know, it's hard, but to develop a player and get nothing for it, you know, your transfer fee, your development in them, and it happens all the time. And it's depressing and it's sad. And it ends in a bittersweet moment. Whereas Eze left, everyone patting him on the back, saying, what a great player. He goes in the Palace and he's turned up the Premier League and he's a great lad, a great kid. And Samuel probably is a good human being, but he'll never step in foot inside QPR again when he does come back from Turkey without a course of booze, because he'll be hated now. And that's a shame, because he's a great player and he'll be a huge loss for us. We should be getting 6 or 7 million for him.
One of the players that I've read that could potentially not necessarily be a direct replacement to Asaidi Samuel, what QPR could be looking to bring in on loan, is the Fulham midfielder, Stefan Johansson. Do you think that he would be a good, would he bolster the QPR midfield? Are you guys excited when you hear Stefan Johansson could be coming to Loftus Road?
Well, the trouble with me is I'm old, so I don't judge anyone until they put a QPR shirt on. I mean, if we signed Messi, I'd judge him on what he does for us, because we'd probably play him as a goalkeeper and ruin his career. I think we need that midfield boost. You know, we've got Cameron, who's old and his legs are more or less good. He is. I'm
surprised
he's
still hanging around, to be honest with you.
As much as we are. Well, again, last season we had to pick it for a game, and by doing that, we triggered his contract into this season. So, you know, and we let Mark Pugh go because of the same reasons, but we kept Cameron, who on his day can be quite decent, but he hasn't had a lot of them recently, and he's club captain as well, which is a bit strange. So, yeah, anything that brings a midfield up the standard, because a midfield is not up the standard at all. We need a combative midfielder. We need an out-and-out winger to replace Samuel. We've got Albert Adoma. We've got Willock here. We haven't seen that much of. We've got Thomas, who's always injured. So there's a few signs that could be made just to bolster that side of the pitch, but we'll definitely need to bring a midfielder. And he's quite decent from what I remember of him. It's hard to judge Fulham players, because every time we play them, they friggin' stuff us. So I watched the game from behind my hands. So I'm like this after they threw it. Like, oh. So yeah, he's decent and he'll bring quality to the team if we get him.
So with that being said, how does QPR tactically, what are their tactics? How do they set up? What can we expect from QPR when we turn the game on, either lunchtime, your time, or for me, early morning? What can we expect tactically in the way QPR set up?
Well, it's a strange one, because most of the season we have, we've been playing from the back and he's sticking this one up front, and the midfield at times get overrun. The fullbacks get absolutely mullered down the wings, and we suffer from the other side. If they've got the wingers in form, we're screwed, because Kane and Nico do get overrun a lot in the flanks, which is a real shame. But it's hard to say, because the Luton game, I was expecting the worst, and we turned out, we played some really good football, actually. Barbe was a much better player than he has been all season. Whether that's because we've now got a goal scorer, so they're not feeling so pressurised, because the defence had the biggest self-destruct button ever. You know, we just do the most craziest, stupidest mistakes, which I'm sure Derby do. When you're, people say that when you're bottom of the league, all the luck goes against you. It doesn't. You just panic, because you're aware of where you are, the players are aware of it, and they just go into full panic mode. And when you panic, things happen. And that's what we've been doing all season. We've been throwing away games left, right and centre through pure and utter panic. And, you know, I think if we can, as I say, springboard, there's a good footballer inside. Ilias Chir is a fantastic footballer. There's no two ways about it. And if we get him on the ball more, get him moving around the pitch, Tom Carroll, I think he might be out for the next couple of games. But we've got the players. They just need that enforcer to win the ball, to pass, to release. And play with, you know, one thing I've noticed with QPR this season has slightly depressed me. And that's why I'm pleased you brought Austin back. We weren't playing with a smile on our face. You know what I mean? It's a bit like Derby under your last manager. It's like they look depressed. Do you know what I mean? The players just look sad. They don't look like they're enjoying it. And I want to see players out there enjoying themselves. And I noticed that certainly against Luton, people seem to be a lot more at ease with having a fully functional striker, which I think helps. But yeah, it's sad when you see teams not playing with smiles on their faces, because, you know, if you're not enjoying it, you're not. It's hard to gauge a game when the players look so freaking. I mean, our players look like they've been on Valium for about a week, and that's pure mistakes. And because, you know, relegation, if, you know, League One would kill us financially, it would kill us in more than, because to get out of there, I mean, just ask, you know, Sheffield United how hard it is to get out of that league. It's horrendous. So it would scare the bejesus out of me if we did get relegated. So I could see that they're terrified. But yeah, we have got the ability to be a good football team, as long as we release the players and let them play the way they want to play.
Talking about the game, which we've been doing, obviously, but more directly, what's your kind of score prediction? How is the game going to go? And what's it going to take for QPR? First of all, what's it going to take for QPR to get a result? How do you think the game's going to go? And what's your score prediction?
I never do predictions. I'm crap at them. Seriously.
Better. Jason will tell you that.
It's not good, isn't it? I always look at games and think, oh, yeah, you know. I know. Have you got a striker that hasn't scored for about 2 months?
Yeah, we've got several players, yeah.
Okay. Well, he hasn't scored for 6 or 7 months. Put a 5 on them to score. So, yeah, I think it's again, you know, you got that win last night, which I think will help you. And you've got Rudy taking charge, and he obviously wants to establish authority in the team. It might be a bit too soon for him to do that, and it might just be a case of you guys getting through the rest of the season without getting relegated, a bit like us. So it's going to be two teams terrified to fall into that bottom three, because no one expected Rotherham to make a fist of it and to do what they're doing. Wickham are gone, and it's whether or not, like, Millwall and Cardiff and Coventry slide into that zone, and then we can move up is kind of the hope, because it's so freaking tight down there. So I reckon it could be nervous, but with Austin, who knows? I mean, if you give him 3 chances, he's bound to take 2 of them. So everything pins on Austin, to be honest with you. I'd like to think we'll win 2-1. If we could stop conceding goals, I'd be a very happy soul. But we concede a hell of a lot of goals from set pieces and everything else. So, and I imagine you'd probably score against us. But yeah, I'm going for 2-1 the Rangers, purely because I dread to think what would happen if we lost.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I was thinking about that. I was thinking about kind of the exact same, along the same lines as you. I mean, judging by the performance that Derby put in last night, and judging by the game that was in the fall, which seems like, how long ago does that seem? 5 years ago in the fall? I mean,
you lot have got new presidents since that game. That's how long ago it was. It was still this year. It was only last year.
That's true. And yeah, I mean, it's a tough one to call. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a footballing classic. I hope it is. You know, we turn the game on and it's like, whoa, you know, look at these two great footballing sides. But I don't think it'd be much of a spectacle. Derby struggled of late trying to get goals, but they have tightened up recently at the back. So, you know, I'm going to say, I think Charlie Austin is a difference maker. I think he will get a goal, but I would be confident Darby could also get a goal, like you were saying, with kind of the calamitous kind of mistakes that QPR make at the back from time to time. So I'm going to go with a 1-1 score prediction.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, hopefully, Paul, hopefully I'm right, because then it means Darby picks up a point and you're wrong, because that means QPR, we can share the points. But, you know.
Yeah, it's tricky, love.
You know, and I just wanted to ask you, you know, how excited are you? How much are you looking forward to returning to Loftus Road and being able to be in CLI football match again?
You see, I'm quite lucky, as in I managed to get two games in after lockdown when the sadly it was against Stoke and Reading and it wasn't as spectacular as we wanted. But yeah, it's do you know what? It's really weird. It's not like, you know, a match experience. I mean, for me, it's, listen, football's about your friends. It's about having a couple of pints, having a good old whinge, meeting up with your pals. And you know, I've got a friend that comes down from Stoke, and when we're doing away games, I meet him and we have a good catch-up and things like that. And then we watch the football. And so it was quite weird watching it like that there with very few people in it, social distancing, which is fine. But it just wasn't the same. And it was kind of weird. It was kind of like almost teasing you. But yeah, I would suggest I wouldn't probably do it again unless everyone could go in, because it just wasn't the experience that I thought it should be. And I miss my pals. So yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back in there again, hopefully. But it's more important that people stop dying, I guess. And you know, wanting to go to football matches is a small whinge, but for mental health wise, God, you miss it. You know, you miss them days. You don't realize how much it does for your mental health, just meeting your mates, having a crack and watching QPR normally mess up a good away day. But yeah, it'll be fantastic to get back in there again and have a bit of a crack and just enjoy yourself. But I mean, if you had told me a year ago this sort of thing would happen, it's kind of bizarre. I'm still kind of in shock that it's still going on, you know, and there's still how football's managed to somehow put matches together with having youth teams and reserve teams and players going down and games being cancelled. It just seems mad. But hopefully, yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I think, I'm sure Derby fans, I think the same things. It's just been the strangest year. And you can tell that the players aren't really enjoying it without fans either. I mean, you know, it's just not the same.
And Paul, before I let you go, I would 100% echo those sentiments. I think once we get fans back, and it's obviously safe to do so, like you say, you know, you don't want to go in. And obviously you were able to go to the two games, but it was different for you. You know, we're all looking forward to getting back to kind of how it was February, you know, this time kind of last year, where everyone could just enjoy themselves. And I want to agree with that. I think mental health wise and just enjoyment wise, I think it helps a lot of people. Before I let you go, I just want to ask, you know, where can we find the QPR podcast on Twitter? How can we listen to you?
Well, yeah, it's called the QPR podcast. He searches on Twitter and he searches on the interweb, as they say. We're all over it, and there's three or four of us, and I don't think Derby fans would enjoy it too much, but thank you for recommending us. And, you know, these podcasts are brilliant, aren't they? Because for years we listen to people talk about our clubs and they don't really get it. They don't really understand them. They don't understand the culture. I think podcasts would be freaking brilliant, because you got people like me who drive a van, people like yourself, and, you know, we know far more about our club than people who are paid to talk about us. So it's nice. So, yeah, we just talk absolute shite, to be honest with you. And this season has been very depressing, apart from last week, which is very uplifting. So probably a bit like yourselves. But obviously, I wish you could look after Saturday, and hopefully, you know, we can both survive. I just hope the game's not really nervous. You know what I mean? I hope it's a great game and not full of nerves and mistakes. And hopefully we become a clear 6-0 winners, and then I'll wake up and, you know, I'll take 1-0 off Charlie Austin's arse, to be honest. We just get the points. But yeah, hopefully it's a goal feast of football, and it's marvellous. And we can say, oh, look at football in lockdown, it's not that bad. But the reality is, it'll probably be crap, full of mistakes, and someone will probably win 1-0.
Well, there we go. Paul, I appreciate you coming on. I hope we can chat again when QPR play Derby again next season. And hopefully it's in the Championship and not in League One. But
can you imagine?
Well, and maybe we could do a joint Sing the Misery podcast as well. comes for both.
Do you know what we could do? We could do a fans guide to League One again, like, you know, like all over League One, and just, you know, in reference. Well, if we play some before you, I'll come and give you a heads up of the best pubs, the best places to go, and where not to go, because League One scares the bejesus out of me. Been there, done it. Don't want to go back.
It scares the bejeebies out of me as well. But Paul, I really appreciate you coming on. Thanks. We had a cracking chat. I really enjoyed it. Thanks for the insights on QPR, and hopefully, hopefully we get a feast of football on Saturday lunchtime for you, for your luncheon, and for me, Saturday breakfast.
Brilliant stuff, mate.
Appreciate it, Paul. And we'll look forward to chatting with you in the near future.
Good man. Take care of yourself, mate. Cheerio.
Our thanks to Paul from the QPR podcast. Looking forward to the game on Saturday. It should be, I would say, a cracking opportunity, a cracking game, but I don't know. Might not be so great. But now joining me to talk a few things about Derby County is the one, the only, Jake Barker, host of Not Another Derby Podcast. I have to say that exasperated. Jake, how are we?
I'm very good, thank you, mate. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. We've got a little event up the road, little inauguration going on, but why watch that? Why watch history when I can sit there and talk about the greatest club in world football? And I don't mean Nottingham Forest, because that would be wrong and false. It's Derby County. Anyway, Jake, I wanted to get your thoughts on the last, couple games and, the news of the past week or so. Because, it's just another slow week in the life of Derby County. There's never anything to talk about. So, what are we going to talk about? But first of all, I want to get your thoughts. Rotherham and Bournemouth. What were your kind of thoughts on the game of Rotherham?
Rotherham was a weird one, wasn't it? Because the team only trained for a few days before the game. They've had pretty much a week without any actual proper training. And I think it showed, didn't it? I mean, when you're watching the game, the team looked tired. They didn't look sharp. They looked really out of sorts, didn't they? And I think it was, compared to the performances of the weeks before, I know we ended up losing to Sheffield Wednesday, but we looked such a better unit. And I think against Rotherham, it looked like everything we'd done in the weeks before had been undone. But thankfully, the performance, despite being poor, sort of gave us a little bit of a kick up the backside going forwards.
Yeah, and I think that's what we needed. And going into last night's game, I'll be honest with you, I expected a little bit better from Bournemouth. Having watched them a few times, they looked to me probably the best footballing side I had seen in let's be honest, is we're a relatively poor championship, league table this season. But, I was expecting a little bit more from them, but lo and behold, Derby come away with a victory. So, what were your thoughts on that? Did you like Bournemouth's kind of weird goalkeeper outfield shirt that they were wearing? Because I was watching, I was like, is that a goalkeeper kit they're all wearing?
I'm actually quite a big fan of that kit. I quite like it. I like quirky kits and kits like that. I think there's a bit of a market for that. I think a lot of people are really into it. I'd like Derby to have one like that.
What you need to do, Jake, is you need to go look up the new Club America third jersey from
that. Oh, I saw it. Oh, yeah.
Black and white, put a rem on that sucker and just shut up and take my money.
But that would be a good kit.
Yeah. So your thoughts on Bournemouth.
So I think Bournemouth, they played into our hands a little bit. I think they reminded me, obviously not the style of play or anything, but the way they set up and the way they set up the same way pretty much every game reminded me of us in sort of 2013 to 2015, where we had a plan A and plan B was to do plan A but better. And I think they set up in the 3-5-2. We knew we could match them in the 3-5-2. So we played them in the 3-5-2 and they just looked like they didn't have any ideas on how to break us down. Apart from that one really good header that Roos managed to keep out, which was great goalkeeping, I don't think they really created anything, did they? They had the Solanke miss, but apart from that, they looked a little bit limp.
Yeah, they did. And, obviously Solanke, to be fair, to be honest to him, a player of his rumored quality and how this big kind of price tag, you would expect him to kind of bury that 5 minutes in, and it's a completely different game. But yeah, I mean, that save from Keller Roos, I mean, I know superlatives are bashed around in football a lot, but that was a magnificent save that saved the game, obviously, for Derby, and a difference, but two points gained there. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think Bournemouth kind of played to the standard that Derby were kind of at. I think from a Derby perspective, it was a fantastic result. Don't get me wrong, but I don't think the performance was high on quality. I think it was high on heart. I think it was trying 150% and doing whatever you can to scrape and muscle. And that's kind of the position that Derby are in now. You you can't really worry about winning pretty. You just have to win, even if it's win ugly. You got to get 3 points on the board. I know it sounds very American when I say like win ugly, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. But yeah, you know, you got to win ugly. You got to get the points on the board. And I think Bournemouth kind of played to the hands. I think, to be honest, the state of the Pride Park pitch, which has been awful, let's just be honest, because that's the one thing you can always say about Derby. They've got a good playing surface, but it looks like they let like a herd of cattle go on the field or something. Like, I don't know what they've been, monster truck rally, or maybe Mel's making some money having like secret monster truck rallies or something. But I think the pitch didn't help Bournemouth, because I don't think that they necessarily expected that kind of playing surface to come out. Obviously you come out to warm up and things, and they're professionals, but I was a bit disappointed in the way that they did it. But from a Derby perspective, there are 3 players that really were outstanding, and they've been outstanding all year, Jake. We don't need to discuss them in great detail, but I want to get your thoughts on them. Nathan Byrne, Christian Bielik, and Graham Shinney. How good were they last night?
They're all players that are really, really strong and solid players, with Bielik sort of being the one with the real quality. I think Shinney, what he gives you that I think no other player in our team gives you is both that sort of combination of grit and the work rate. You know, he was everywhere for the whole game. He was everywhere. And, you know, there were times when he just like smash into people and things like that. And it stopped us from being under as much pressure for the majority of the game, because their midfielders would get it and they'd always have to sort of have one look over their shoulder and he's there. You know, he's always going to be there to try and win the ball. And yeah, I think Bielik sort of speaks for himself, doesn't he? I think he's one of the best players we've had in my lifetime. I don't know about you, but he's some talent. And Byrne as well, you know, a few people were concerned, me included, when Bogle went, but Burns come in, and the fact that he's got pace, the fact that he's good on the ball, and he can put a good ball in as well, which, you know, it's he's a good player to have. And I think, yeah, last night, those 3 were very key in us winning the game.
Is Christian Bielik the best player in the championship?
I think he's definitely up there. He'd definitely be in the top 5. I'm not sure who my top 5 would be. But, you know, there's some phenomenal players in this league. You know, Buendia at Norwich, who really, really shouldn't be here. You know, Jack Wilshere's just signed for Bournemouth. He didn't do much last night, mainly because Graham Shinney was trying to hack his knees off for the whole time he was on. But he didn't do much last night. But, you know, he's got the quality. We've seen him do it for England and places like that. I think there are some quality players, but Bielik's definitely up there. He's got to be. What do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think Christian Bielik's up there. And my point about Jack Wilshere is Graham Shinney doesn't have to try to take him out at the knees. Give Jack Wilshere 20 minutes in a football game. I think that'll just happen naturally, unfortunately for him. But yeah, I think when you look at the 3, Graham Shinney, I think, is just proving to be a fantastic signing. I was a big fan of him when he first came in. Obviously, had to wait for his opportunity under Kaku. But he's one of those players that you just put in the side and you just give him a run of games, and you don't have to worry about that position, because he's going to give you a 7, 7.5, 8 out of 10 week in and week out. His quality, what's really surprised me this year, is his quality from set pieces. He's taken all the corners now, the free kicks, and he's the penalty taker, which is kind of another facet of the game that you don't necessarily expect from the Scottish Pirlo, you know? Christian Bielik, I agree. I think he's in the conversation as being one of the best players, if not the best player in the championship, since he's come back from his knee injury. I mean, I wasn't Christian Bielik's biggest fan. I think the way he got sent off and then getting his knee, it was kind of like, this guy's, you know, another big time Charlie from Arsenal or whatever. And I may have said he could fob back off there, but I'm happily to eat my humble pie. as long as it's a low calorie humble pie, because I want to fit in my tracksuit. But, you know, I think Christian Bielik, from the way I think he's one of the catalysts to Derby's kind of, I guess it's a mini revival, I guess we could call it that, because I know confidence is still fragile, but obviously they've turned the results around. And I would be shocked. I would be absolutely shocked if he's a Derby player come next season, based off of the fact that the Euros is this summer as well. And Nathan Byrne, like you, I mean, Jaden Bogle, I loved him because, you know, he was a youth academy, exciting young player. He had his defensive frailties. Let's not gloss over that, but he got his Premier League move. And I think everybody was kind of like, well, who are we going to play? Is Wisdom going to go out there? Is Tavirik going to go out there? But Burns came in and we kind of took advantage of Wigan's financial plight with Marshall and Byrne. But Byrne, to be honest with you, I sit there and I don't even remember, no disrespects, I don't even remember sometimes Bogle even played for Derby. in the game, because it's not like
I get what you mean.
He's been playing there for 5 years, and he's kind of like you say, he's always an attacking outlet. You know, he's very quick. I mean, up front, he was playing at times last night as a center forward, which, I mean, he had like cracking shots on goal, and you're like, what's he doing? And I think Bielik maybe played him a ball, and there were no Bournemouth players on that side, like that whole half of the pitch, and he was just like wide open, and he had like acres and acres of space. But he's really become such a key part to Derby. And I'm so pleased that, you know, whoever scouted him, you know, it's obviously not the people who scouted Dembele and what was it at the time? Dembele and Mbappe. Yeah. I mean, those guys turned out to be okay. It's Derby scouting department for you. So yeah, killing Mbappe, Nathan Byrne. I'm taking Nathan Byrne every day of the week, twice on Sunday. I don't need the big time Charlie of killing Mbappe, whoever he is. Whatever. I have never seen Paris Saint-Germain win the FA Cup. Have you? Never. No. Ever won a championship game? Never. There you go. So yeah, I mean, I think it's a bit of a mini revival, and hopefully Derby can continue to keep the players, you know, that they need to keep. And fair play to Bielik for even staying on the field, because after that nasty clash of heads, I saw that board and I was like, oh man, he's down for the count. He looks, I hate to say this, it's not a pun. He looked poleaxed. And I thought maybe he was a bit concussed or something like that. And he had a bit of a strange, like, couple minutes where you were kind of trying to figure out, is he concussed? Can he still play? And then he pops up with the goal and he has this another magnificent performance to pile in there. So, I mean, who, other than Bournemouth being a little bit disappointing, was there anybody that was a bit off color for you last night from a Derby perspective?
I don't think so, to be honest. I think the way we set our team out now, you were talking about a mini revival. I think the way we set our team out now is very similar to how we did before, but Rooney's made some very good changes, which I think have benefited the whole team. As you mentioned about Shinny taking set pieces, that's something, you know, Rooney took every set piece, or, you know, Tom Lawrence, when he was on, took every set piece. And I think the fact that we've got, you know, Byrne and Shinny putting the balls in, they're two of our smaller players. And that means that the bigger players can get into the box. And now all of a sudden we're starting to score from set pieces because we've got all our large players in the box. And it's you know, it's creating us chances. They might not always score, but they're more of a problem for the opposition than if, like, 5'8" Graham Shinny's trying to beat a 6'5" centre half in the air. But when you've got all these massive players in there, you know, you're going to score more goals. But off-colour-wise, I don't really think anyone had a bad game. I've got to give a shout-out to George Evans as well, because he was brilliant. Yeah, yeah. He comes in from the cold and puts in a brilliant performance. I'd say probably the only player who had any shaky moments was Andre Wisdom. I think he had a couple of shaky communication moments with Roos, nearly scored that own goal. Missed a couple of headers. But then at the same time, you've got to take into account he won some brilliant challenges at times. And I think him next to Clark is a really strong partnership. You can see the way they play off each other. So even though he didn't have probably the best game of his career, and I'm sure he'd be probably the first to admit that, he still had a good enough game. And, you know, we came away with 3 points.
Yeah, and to that point, Graham, what you want to say there with George Evans, I like George Evans. I think Mr. Utility is fantastic. You got to have those kind of players in your squad. And that was, what, his first start since November? And he comes in, and let's be honest, he's not Sergio Ramos or rolling back the ears to Fabio Cannavaro, but he was magnificent. He made that tackle in the box, and that guy was just – Danjuma was just done for. He just was like, I'm not dealing with these trickeries. Get this crap out of here. And he just went – Danjuma just – well, he was on the train. He was like – he was just gone. He was in the Frankie and Benny. He was just gone. But to come in and to have someone like that who doesn't necessarily complain, or you don't hear rumblings of somebody complaining when they're not in the side, and he comes in and puts a performance in like that, especially when all of a sudden you're changing the formation and he's not a center half by trade. I like him there, but I also like the fact that he can play center midfield. I think you're dead on there. I mean, he deserves a massive shout out. So away from the game, I mean, again, nothing else happened this week at Derby. Am I right? So, but, you know, that's the good thing about being a Derby fan, is there's always something. Oh, one other point I wanted to talk about with the game is we often criticize the referees for poor decisions. Was it a handball, Bielik's goal?
I think it's one of them where if it's given, you'd be enraged, because it could be construed as a handball. But at the same time, I don't really see how it could be given. You know what I mean? It'd have to take a ref with a lot of confidence to give that as a handball, especially with how it just sort of, you know, it, because the ball hit him in the face. The ball hit him in the face, and then it hit the guy in front of him, and then it bounced down. You know, there's not a lot you can do about that. And I think, I don't think it was. What do you think?
No, I would agree with you. I would agree. Yeah. It's just, you know, you start to see kind of the luck even out after sometimes you get really awful goal scoring decisions, right? We go back to Forrest with Martin Waghorn being offside and impeding the goalkeeper, even though he's basically near the corner flag. I mean, let's be honest. He was standing in the Trent. Bryce Samba was nowhere near him. And then, you know, you get something like this. So maybe the luck's starting to even out a little bit with that. But, you know, from an off-the-field perspective, you know, obviously you've got your podcast. You talk about this stuff. You're a Derby fan. Colin Kazem Richards once called you dope, which is just that's just an amazing thing. I wish Colin Kazem Richards, please call his podcast dope one time. That would be awesome. But you know, what do you make of the last week with the takeover is still imminent? Stephen Pearce is kind of on Radio Derby, takeover is happening, but I'm not really involved in those discussions.
Yeah.
The player's still not being paid. You get the word out from Manchester City now about fiddling over the £500,000 for Scott Carson, you know, and then, you know, will there be money for the takeover? How do you make sense of the past week or 10 days?
So I'll do the Carson thing quickly because that's only a small one compared to the big story that's the takeover. With the Carson one, I find it interesting because they made an agreement with us to pay that money, and then they can't really kick up a fuss if we go, well, you can't have him for free now. Can you keep paying the money? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a really strange one. I think it's one of those where we're a club that's in turmoil at the minute and people are going to write any story they can to try and make us look worse than we are. So I'd be genuinely surprised if there's anything really in that, to be honest. But the takeover is a completely different story. I think it's got to a point now where no one really knows. I have a feeling that it's not going to go through. And I think, I'm sure you feel the same. A lot of fans feel the same. It really doesn't feel like it's going to come through. You know, there's been rumours of it was all signed off to go and then one of the investors dropped out. And obviously, you know, the Sheikh isn't like the big money man in this. It's the investors that are the money men and he's just sort of a front for it. So if the investors have dropped out, then all of a sudden there's no money in it. And then all of a sudden the takeover can't happen. So I don't know, to be honest. I feel sorry for Pearce because he's come out and said stuff, whether he was sent out on purpose to do stuff, because, you know, obviously that Rams group and everything founded. Rams Trust put out a big statement, didn't they, as well? They sort of came out of the darkness because I hadn't heard anything from them for years. And yeah, it seemed like he sort of came out to try and calm people down because people were starting to lose it, you know. When supporters are actively making groups to challenge the club, and it's getting to a point where, maybe we should actually do something about this. And yeah, it just came out that he was going to speak. He spoke. And then within like a day, everyone was like, well, that's not true. So, yeah, I don't know. What do you make of it? It's a weird situation, isn't it?
It was. I mean, I spoke with the Coming Home Newcastle people from SB Nation and my friend Elijah Newsom, who covers Newcastle for them. And we spoke to a couple other Newcastle fan groups because BZG tried to buy Newcastle several years ago. And when the news first broke in October, I was like, okay, let's put a blog out. Let's find out what BZG is all about. And they kind of said like very similar things. And I was reading it. I was like, okay, well, that's just Mike Ashley and, you know, you can make excuse. Well, that's Mike Ashley being Mike Ashley and, you know, Newcastle and Derby, they're different because they're in different leagues. But now that you look at it, it really makes a lot of sense. BZG, when they went to Newcastle, they sounded Mike Ashley out for a long time and kind of really struggling along, but they never put proof of funds up. They always say, oh, we're going to do this for Newcastle. We're going to do this. We're going to make them this and came up with all these statements, but they never put any money up.
Yeah.
And then eventually just kind of has gone away and Newcastle's still owned by Mike Ashley and whatever. And I was like, okay, it's going to be different with Derby. I think that's what we all kind of knew the news and whatever, but we were kind of like, this time it's going to be different. And now I'm sitting here and I 100% agree with you, Jake. I would be absolutely shocked if BZG takes over. I can see more likely that Michael Dell will take over because Mel Morris is already into Michael Dell for like, what is it? Like 40 million or something like that in terms of loans and everything like that. And I think he's mortgaged. He's got Pride Park and the training ground with mortgages against him or whatever. Mm. And to be honest with you, we sit here now and it's, what day is it? It's Wednesday and administration's a real threat and a real loom. And the only thing that scares me is administration happens, points deduction comes down and I can't see anything other than the first, you know, a one-way ticket to League One.
Yeah. I think, with regards to Michael Dell, I don't think Michael Dell's actually, I might be wrong here, so don't pick me up if anyone listens and thinks I'm talking rubbish, but I'm pretty sure Michael Dell isn't actually directly involved with MSD Holdings. I'm pretty sure that's like a part of the company, but it's not actually a part that he actively runs. Yeah. So I'd be surprised if he was involved, but I wouldn't be surprised if they got involved permanently, especially with all the stuff they like literally already own or not own, but you know what I mean? They have a mortgage on it. It's not a good situation, is it? It's not a good one. I don't think we'll go into administration. If we do, I don't actually think it'll be the end of the world, because I have a feeling we're going to really kick on now and really start pushing. You know, our problem is breaking down teams that are poorer than us. We can do it against the teams that are open, like we showed last night, like we showed against Swansea, like we showed against Norwich. But the teams that shut up shop and we have to break them down, we seem to struggle with. If we can, hopefully, if the takeover doesn't go through and anybody takes over, I'm talking anybody, sort of comes in with any sort of money, brings in a couple of players on loan. You know, we were linked with Umar Nias again for like the 600th time today. And if we could bring in someone like that, that scores goals or a creative player, and we start scoring against these poorer teams, we'll start picking up points and we'll start climbing the table. So I think it's all a matter of what Mel chooses to do.
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, the league's so tight. One win from Derby, they go second bottom, and now they're at the relegation zone. I mean, that's how tight it is. And you know, Jake, and most of our listeners probably know as well, how tight the championship is every year. And you put four or five wins together, and you're up there. You lose four or five games, and you're straight back down there. So it is a really, really tight league this year. And I, you know, like we just kind of echoed, is the quality of the teams is just not what it has been in previous years. If this is the year... And I know we had said this before, if this is the year you kind of want to get out of the championship, this is kind of the year to do it. If you're kind of an average team, you know, if Millwall's looking to come up, this is the kind of the time to make the push, because a lot of them big boys have been kind of out. So, you know, what are your expectations then for the next couple of weeks for Derby? Are they going to continue this run? Is confidence so fragile that they lose 2-3-0 or they lose 2-0 to QPR and it goes pear-shaped again for a little bit? I mean, what's the next week or 10 days hold for Derby in your eyes?
I think with regards to QPR, they're one place above us, I think. Or they were when I checked yesterday. They might have moved, but they're one place above us. You know, they're not a good team. But the problem is we seem to struggle against the teams that aren't good, which is what I think might cause us to drop points in these sorts of games. So it all depends on whether we can score early on, like we did last game. And I think if we score early on in any of these games, we'll really push on and start to score goals, because then the other team has to open up. They have to push forward. They can't just sit back and try and play for a late winner. Because, you know, we've conceded 13 goals between the 76th and 90th minute, which is mental. Like, there's more than any other team in the league. So teams know that if they just defend against us for, you know, 70, 80 minutes, they can nick a goal near the end. So if we can grab a couple of goals early on and win that QPR game, I think that could be a massive turning point in our season. But then again, you know, it's us. So there's a big chance that we'll lose to QPR and then all of a sudden we're back where we were last week and everyone thinks we're going to go down and administration's coming. And, you know, I think it's one of those where it's impossible to call, isn't it? And I think it all depends on how the players apply themselves in the next couple of games. What do you reckon?
What are your thoughts? I think it's kind of the same. I think confidence is just so fragile that, you know, one poor result. I mean, if Charlie Austin bags two at the weekend and we're back, like you say, it's back at square one and we're all doom and gloom on Twitter. To be honest, I don't think I've ever been. Have you ever seen a positive Derby County Twitter? I don't think I ever have. I think it's like when it's positive, nobody says anything or does anything, which is just strange. It's just weird. I don't know what that environment would be like. It'd be like a weird Nirvana kind of thing. But yeah, I think, you know, confidence is so fragile that, you know, the next kind of week of 10 days are big, not only for the team on the field, because obviously you need to get results to get out of this kind of quagmire that you're in, you know, give yourself a bit of breathing room. I think Derby will still be down in the lower third of the table most of the season. I think that's just kind of where the team is right now. But, you know, pull away, give a little bit of separation, a game or two separation from the bottom three. And I think it's a big time off the field. I think they've got to get it sorted, because obviously we're at the 20th of January now. You're looking at transfer targets and where are they coming? Obviously this team needs strengthening. You know, if Mike Tavarek has gone back, Dutch Mike, Virgil van Mike, you know, unfortunately it just didn't work out. It's just kind of another one of those that just didn't work out, you know, not right place, right time. I think he was kind of hindered with the fact of obviously the red card. And then obviously Philip Kaku being relieved of his duties or leaving by mutual consent to get the correct wording. You know, if Dwayne Holmes goes to Huddersfield, it leaves a lot of holes kind of in the squad, because those holes are going to be filled by, like we saw last night, Cornell McDonald and things like that. And it's great to see the youth players coming through, but is that kind of the battle that you want to be in, you know, with kind of holes in the squad, if you can't kind of replace them with these said targets or whatever. So, I mean, Jake, that's what I wanted to talk to you about with transfers. What do you make of Mike Tavarek, his move, his time here at Derby? You should be able to sum that up in a couple sentences. And then what do you make of Dwayne Holmes's rumored move to Huddersfield?
I think both of them, the Tavarek one, I think is unlucky. I think he's been a little bit of a victim of circumstance, because obviously Kaku brought him in. He was a long-term target. He'd been brilliant in, you know, the Eredivisie. And he looked like everything we needed. Because obviously, since we lost Keogh, we didn't have a permanent centre-half who was like a proper, you know, first-team, not old centre-half. And I think that was something we really needed. And that's why people hyped him, including me. Because, you know, you see clips of him in the Eredivisie and he looked brilliant. He looked like a sort of player that could really make a difference in our team. It's just the problem was, you know, obviously we had that cup game. He got the red card in the cup game, which I thought was quite unlucky, to be honest, because the guy basically just stopped in front of him. But he'd been having a good game up to that point. And then obviously we had the Blackburn game as well, which was just, he put in a poor performance. And I think he sort of got scapegoated a little bit because the whole team was awful. You know, that's probably the worst Derby performance I can remember in a long time. Like the game against Rotherham was bad, but that was really poor. And he came back in against Bournemouth, and I thought he played quite well in a back three, and then he just vanished off the face of the earth. So, you know, we can only trust what Wayne thinks is the right thing to do. And if he doesn't think Tavarek's the man to play there, then, you can only trust the judgment. He knows a lot more than we do. I think that's something that's worth remembering. You know, he sees these players in training every day. He's got a decent track record as a player. So I'm pretty sure he'd know a good player if he saw one. And if he doesn't think he's a good player, then, you know, I completely trust him. When it comes to Holmes, I feel bad for Holmes, to be honest, because when he started, you know, he was brilliant for Lampard. And the first half of the season under Kaku, you know, people were talking about him being player of the season because he was just that influential. You know, his work rate, his ability to run at players, the fact he'd create chances. He didn't get many goals or assists, but he was always the sort of player, he'd get, you know, quite a few key passes. He'd always be in and around the box. And I think the problem is that, you know, he picked up that injury. He ended up being left out of the team, sort of came back in later on. And he wasn't as good under Kaku last season. And then this season, he's looked a shadow of himself. He doesn't seem, you know, to have the willingness to run. And, you know, I've interacted with him quite a lot outside of football. And he's a really nice bloke. And his heart's in the right place and his head's in the right place. But I just don't think under Rooney or under Kaku this season, he can play a role that would improve the team. Because if you think about it, in the positions he plays, you know, out wide, we've got three players that I'd arguably say are more suited to play out wide than him. You know, in the middle, he's got Sibley, he's got Lawrence, you know, he's got a number of players that would play in attacking midfield if we played a 4-2-3-1. And I think it's just sort of got to a point where he's got no place in the team. And if we can make money out of it from a player who's only got 6 months left on his contract, I think that's really good business, as sad as I'll be to see him go.
Yeah. I'm going to join you in the crying tears. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, that's not patronizing or anything like that. I like Dwayne Holmes. I mean, obviously he's an American international. And like yourself, I've interacted with him as well. And he's always a super nice guy. He's got plenty of time for fans and he's just a genuinely like nice guy. But you know, like you say, he was fantastic under Lampard, but his influence has kind of waned recently. And with 6 months to go on his deal, the contracts talks had kind of stalled. I think it is a smart move from the club to cash in. And I think it's kind of a smart move for Holmes as well, in a way, to get back. Yeah. You know, he's going to be playing in the championship with Huddersfield. I don't think Huddersfield are in danger of going down. It gives him an opportunity to be reunited, obviously, with Richard Keogh. But You know, it goes back to a club that he was at before, a bit of a change of scenery. Sometimes you just need that from a player, but I 100% agree with you. He's looked kind of the shadow of himself. This maybe for at least the last year. And it's kind of disappointing to see, because on the back of that Lampard season, he played for America. And I don't know if you saw those two games, but one of them
was in
DC, and he was phenomenal. And I was talking to a few of my like friends who podcast on, you know, American soccer and everything like that. And they were just like, who's this guy? I mean, he's just phenomenal. Like, where'd they get him from? And he was the best American player in that preliminary Gold Cup squad. And then he got the quad injury, which kind of wrecked him with the first part of Philip Cocu. We obviously didn't go to Florida. He was there in and out of the team. He came in at a strange time in that weekend team against Forest. And then he ended up breaking his leg, breaking or fracturing his leg, whatever, for, you know, in the round about this time last year. And that's kind of derailed him. And it's a bit disappointing to see, because I think he's got a lot of promise. I think he can definitely play at this level. I think he showed that. And I think, you know, even he could even play at a lower Premier League level, because if the Premier League's not as physical as Championship, I think that suits him even better, even more than what a Championship would be. So it's a bit disappointing. And I will, like you, I will be sad to see him go, because I think he can be a valuable squad member, and it's just unfortunate. Again, he's kind of like Graham Shinney. You put him in the team and you just leave him in the team every week and he'll perform. But when you keep chopping and changing and he comes on as a sub and then you don't see him for 3 weeks and then he comes in, he doesn't really have the kind of, he needs to get in that flow to kind of strut his stuff and express himself, which we know is there. Because I mean, look at his last goal he scored for Derby. It was like a back flick or whatever. And it was just an amazing kind of goal. And then, you know, Jake, before we kind of sign off for the week, Wayne Rooney, is it the new manager bounce? Obviously he's the manager now. Is it the new manager bounce? Are you happy to see him in charge? Do you still want an experienced manager? And how do you see that he's changed the team?
I think when that Middlesbrough game happened and we lost 3-0, I think me and a lot of people were quite vocal in the fact that we don't want him as a manager at the time. We didn't want him, you know, as a manager. He barely ran, he barely put a shift in, and he hadn't all season. And then, you know, obviously Cocu had gone previous to that. And it kind of felt a little bit like, oh, he's not tried all season, and now all of a sudden the manager's gone and he's trying for the manager's position. And I think for a few people, it left a little bit of a bitter taste in the mouth, because it felt like Cocu had been played a bit. But the difference that he's made since coming in, I mean, you could say new manager bounce, which, you know, part of that is probably true. But at the same time, our shape is much better. The movement out wide is much better. The way we look to spread it out wide before moving inside is so different to what we did under Cocu. You know, under Cocu, we tried to sort of pass our way round teams, whereas under Rooney, we get into the channels, we get into the spaces, and that helps us create chances. And when you've got players like, you know, Buchanan and Byrne that are flying down the wing on the overlap, it's like, I'll tell you what it's like. It's like Steve McLaren's teams. And I find it interesting that he's in the coaching staff and he does a lot of the training. With a new head of hair, the hair island seems to have gone. But yeah, I think he's doing a good job. And if he can keep us up, bring a couple of players in if he's allowed, I think he could be a really good manager for us. As much as I didn't think so about 6 weeks ago, I think him being picked as a manager is probably one of the best things we could have had, because, you know, he knows the squad, doesn't he? If we brought someone new in, they'd have to learn the squad. You'd go through it. You'd have a few games where like the squad's like quite rotated and we could end up have really like fallen below where we should be, really, where our performances have taken us.
What do you feel? And this is my last point, Jake, is what do you feel? Jason Knight, El Capitano, is he too young to get the captaincy? I mean, for me last night, I'm looking at it and you've got Christian Bielik, you've got Andre Wisdom, you've got Graham Shinney. I love Jason Knight as a player, as I'm sure you do as well, but what do you feel about Jason Knight in the captaincy? Is it too soon? Is it just the right time? Can he bear that kind of load?
I find it interesting that Rooney said that Knight would have got the captaincy no matter how old he was, whether he was 30, whether he was 25, whether he's 19. And I think Knight's one of those players where he will run himself into the ground. He will put everything in. And you can see, you know, you've seen the pictures of after Bielik's goal, he's going mad. He, you know, he celebrates every goal like we just scored in a World Cup final. And I think players like that, you know, players like him, players like Kazim Richards are so important. And I think it's good that he's got that, you know, he's got the what he deserves for it. you know, I don't know whether it is the right decision to make him captain at this point, because he is, you know, he's only a young lad. But the fact that a player who's, you know, England's all-time top goal scorer, ex-England captain, ex-Man United captain, thinks that this guy should be captain, I trust that this guy should be captain.
Don't forget, he was DC United captain as well.
Oh, sorry, DC United captain.
There you go. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a strange one. Obviously, it's great to see a homegrown player wear the armband. We saw it with Max Bird. It was great to see him with the captain's armband, Max Bird playing, but Max Bird was just, he's not had the best season. No. But you know, to see Jason Knight with it, it's obviously, it's romantic and it's really great. And it fills you with a lot of love for the DC, the Derby County of the DC United Academy. What am I talking about? I'm just going to go resign. No, the Derby County Academy. But you know, when I look at it, I think Jason Knight is fantastic. And I think, you know, it's fantastic that Wayne Rooney, you know, has this belief in the young player, the young lad to make an impact. Because for me right now, he's got to be up there in the conversation for player of the season. He's young player of the season. That is no contest. He is one young player of the season. He's up there for player of the year award for me. But when I look at it, you know, you've got Graham Shinney, who's captain Aberdeen. You've got Christian Bielik, who's a seasoned Polish international. And you've got Andre Wisdom, who I believe maybe captained Liverpool once,
I don't know.
I don't know. So probably they'll probably get on me for that. So I'm sure Andre Wisdom at some level of football, he's played at high levels, has captained a team one time. I'm sure. Maybe.
He's captained us before.
Yes. So there you go. He's captained Derby before. So it's a bit strange that, you know, you're going to give it to this young lad when you have the more experienced players. Now, Jake, do you know, has he named him permanent captain, or is he just captain in because Marshall's ill?
I don't know. I don't think he has. I don't think, to be honest, I have no idea. Yeah, I don't think he has.
Because, well, I was thinking about the Derby County captains, and your first captain would obviously be Wayne Rooney, who's now the manager. Yeah. Your second captain is Curtis Davis, who is injured with an Achilles tendon. So then obviously Marshall's been wearing it since then. And obviously that makes sense. Scottish international, seasoned pro, obviously a lot of leadership, you know, very, very good professional. And then, so obviously fourth down that list is Jason Knight, but then it makes you wonder, like, is that a permanent thing now that Marshall, like, thing or whatever? So that was the thing. So that'll be interesting to see when Marshall's fit, who takes the armband back. But
I reckon he will, to be honest, mate. I reckon.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I reckon Davis will be club captain and then Marshall will be vice captain, but basically captain because Davis won't play. And then Knight will be, you know, third in command. I don't know. Who knows?
Do you think then this is a bigger football philosophical question? But I know you had a hard day at uni, but we're going to talk philosophy. does wearing that armband still hold the relevancy today that it held 20 years ago before you were born?
I don't know. I think now it's the captain's armband isn't as much of a, I am the leader. It's more of a, you know, I think teams can have multiple leaders, but I think the captain's role is different to that of a normal leader. It's not just the stuff on the pitch that they have to lead. It's the stuff off the pitch and the way they conduct themselves off the pitch too. You know, we had Keogh for years, who was captain, and he used to do so much, like, you know, with the club. He used to go to events and things like that with the club. And it's like, as the captain, you are the face of the club. And I think it's got a bigger role in that respect. Whether it's got as much of a role on the pitch, I'm not sure. But I think off the pitch, being the captain is probably makes you the most important player at a club. I don't know. What do you think?
I think you're right. I don't think it holds the relevance that it did, you know, 20 years ago. Because like you say, there's a lot of players now that are leaders. I mean, we've just talked about three or four there.
Yeah.
And I think that everybody can be a leader in their own right. I don't think necessarily, you know, you see different leaders. Some shout on the pitch. Some are very quiet, but, you know, speak up in the dressing room. Some are just good in the changing room. Then that's what makes them a leader. And I think there's leaders at different facets. You know, you've got your emotional leaders. You've got your, like, your tactical leaders. And you've just got your, you know, people that you respect because they've been in a game a long time. I mean, you know, Wayne Rooney took the captaincy at Derby County based off of his past performances, not because of what he did at Derby. It's just because he was Wayne Rooney and that was the aura that he had. You know, Curtis Davis takes it because he is he is a vocal leader. He was that face. He understood what it, I'm sure he still understands. He understands what it means to be a professional footballer and things like that. So it will be very interesting. And I think it is, I don't think it's the big a load as what it was 20 years ago for a young lad to wear the captain's armband, because at the end of the day, Jason Knight's not going to be, and it's kind of a strange time because he's not going to be going out to events now with COVID going on like that. I wouldn't say it's a bit strange. It's good to see, but I think you're dead on. I think you can get a lot of different leaders in a lot of different ways. You know, you can lean on other players in other environments. You know, there's nothing to say Kelle Roos can't be a leader, even if he's riding the bench, or Mike Tavirik could have been a very good leader because of what, you know, George Evans could be because of the way he, you know, you go about your business. And I think as a young player, it's interesting that he is given the armband, but there's also several senior pros around him that he can learn off of. And like you say, Wayne Rooney was a captain at DC United, Manchester United, Everton, and England. So he knows what it takes to be a captain. He was a captain at a young age, and he was captain as a old age, I guess. I mean, I'm approaching Wayne Rooney's age, so I don't know if that's really old.
I'd say for a footballer, it definitely is.
He's like ancient in footballing terms. But so he's got someone to mentor him, which I think is a fantastic thing as well. And I think you can groom him, but it will be interesting to see who comes back with the armband. But I do think that it doesn't hold the same amount of relevancy, and that there are a lot of leaders at Derby, and hopefully he can inspire Derby to a few more victories, and then we can build a statue of Jason Knight lifting the, I was gonna say the League One trophy, but I'm gonna say, like,
don't want that one.
the Papa John's Pizza Hut cup or whatever.
Oh, what trophy?
Yeah, see, right, that's what you want to win, the Brian Clough trophy. But no, I think it's good to see him do it, and it'll be exciting to see what they have in store longer term. But Jake, I've took up far more of your time than what I probably should have, or what you probably wanted to talk to me with.
I've enjoyed it. It's been good.
So we're pleased to have you back on the podcast now. You can now redo your Instagram answer of the best podcast episode was the one these two, because I was on them. But it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Jake. You're fantastic to interact with online, and obviously in person virtually, because we've not met up yet because of COVID. We're next time in England, but it's always fantastic to talk with you. Love what you do with your new Another Derby podcast. So tell us a little bit about that and where we can find it.
First off, thank you very much. You're very kind, way too kind, I'll say. I'll send you a tenner after this. Another Derby podcast. So there's me, Jacob Hackett, which I'm sure most of you all know. He's a student journalist. Adam Williams, who's a student journalist. And then Lawrence, who does media. So I'm the odd one out being an engineer. We decided there's not really any podcasts for people that are younger, you know, there's none like people that are like going through uni and stuff like that. So Jacob messaged me and was like, oh, do you fancy doing a podcast? And I was like, all right. Cause I'd been on this one. I'd been on Rams Writer and I'd really enjoyed it. You know, I had a really great experience with you before. I had a really good experience with Simon. I saw you guys collab last week, which was good as well. We just thought we'd give it a go. And, hopefully if you enjoyed this, listen to me waffle a little bit on here, then hopefully you'll enjoy that too.
So thank you very much. Appreciate it. I mean, we're always pleased to have so many passionate people, and that's the great thing about Derby. You can see how much passion people have for the club, because you started a podcast in a time where Derby are kind of crap. but the point is that people still listen to it. People still enjoy it because everybody's got an opinion, and that's what football is for, right? That's why we go on Twitter and we share our opinions, and we might like them, we might not like them, but whatever. But football is a game of opinions, and we've all got them. And it's fantastic to have you part of the Derby County podcast family. And it's just great. It's fantastic. And yes, we enjoyed our episode with Simon last week. And we've enjoyed having you on before, and we hope to obviously have you on again. But Jake, I appreciate it. I know I've taken up way too much of your time. By the time we've been talking, we've actually had a new president here. So, like, whoa, that's crazy. I can sit back in 4 years and go, where were you at the start of the Biden administration? I was talking to Jake Barker about Derby County and the captaincy. That's what I'll remember in 4 years' time. You put that in your Twitter feed. But, Jake, it's always a pleasure. I appreciate it. And thank you so much.
Thank you very much, mate.
And that's all the time we've got for today, everybody. Jason will be back with me if he can get over his illness. Jason, get your vitamin C. And we'll be back next time to talk more Derby stuff, possibly preview, maybe even review the Bristol City game. We'll see. We'll see. We might change it up. We don't know. Maybe if we change it up, Derby will do better. We'll find out. But until next time, thanks everybody for listening. Appreciate it. And up the Rams. Yeah!
Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the Rams Review Podcast. We would love it if you'd like to get in touch. On Twitter, we're at RamsReview1. On Facebook, it's Rams Review Podcast. Or you could drop us an email, ramsreview@hotmail.com. Until next time, up the Rams. The Rams Review Podcast are proud to be part of the FanHub 100, putting fans first.